Hello and welcome to my Yellow Bench. I'm Liv Cropper, I'm a transformational leadership coach, and this is Rooted, the human side of sustainability leadership. In every episode of Rooted, I talk with a sustainability leader about their roots in this work, the impact they're most proud of, how they've kept grounded along the way, and the seeds of wisdom they can share with us. In every conversation, we'll talk about how it really feels to do this work. So, if you're ready for today's episode, please take a seat. Okay, so I'm so excited to welcome to Rooted someone who I've only met very recently, actually, but who I really admire and I think is somebody who is definitely becoming a real leader in the sustainability world. So Gemma studied sustainability at Bath University, and then she began her career at Unilever on their Future Leaders program. And she's actually then done lots of work on grassroots sustainability projects all over the world since then. She's now the founder of Trio House, which is a very exciting new sustainability collective. She's based out of a converted pickle factory, a very beautiful one in London. And she's on a fantastic mission to support sustainability professionals with the community and the capabilities needed to handle the real complexity and the human challenges of this work. So I'm absolutely delighted to welcome you to Rooted, Gemma Lannan.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. And so good to have you here. And just before we get going, Gemma, just a reminder that on Rooted, we really go beneath the surface to really explore how it feels to do this work. So we're not going into technical briefings and all the latest sustainability knowledge and information that people might need to know. We're really going under the surface to explore how it really feels to do this work. So I'm going to be really probing you on how did it feel? What was that like? Those kind of questions. So my first question for you, and remember we've got this sort of funny little metaphor that I'm going, it's all about trees, so we're going to be doing roots and branches and seeds and all of that. So my first question is all about your roots in this work. So in the sustainability world, where did your roots begin? What kind of really has driven your journey and this mission that you're on now?
You know, I think for me there's maybe two parts to it. I think I feel inherently this kind of longer term, maybe just over my childhood and how I was brought up, to really have a huge affection for nature and appreciation of the natural world. But if I really think about the question, I do really remember a specific time, actually when I was at university and started this module called sustainability. And I really vividly remember, actually, it must have been the first or second lecture, where I'd only ever, I suppose, learnt about maybe renewable energy, bits and pieces like that along the way. But this particular lecture was really, I suppose, zooming out and looking at the wider journey that humanity has been on and perhaps where we're going. And I just remember feeling so overwhelmed and saddened by it, actually, and confused why I wasn't so aware before of the kind of the scale and severity of the issue. And I remember coming out of that lecture and just walking down the corridor feeling really wobbly, actually, because I couldn't get my head around why life was just buzzing around me and everyone was cracking on with their daily thing. And I felt like I'd just been handed this like enormous truth, I suppose, maybe.
Yes.
And I suppose luckily I've managed to turn that into a passion for something and an energy and a feeling of, okay, right, what are we going to do about it? But that for me is undoubtedly the beginning of where I really then felt like this was really where I wanted to pour my energy into. And it was, a shocking moment, actually, rather than just what I'd been used to of, oh, this is nice and I'd like to look after it. It was a much more kind of coming from maybe fear, really.
Yes. I'm sort of smiling and laughing along with you when you're saying this, and yeah, it's not funny really, is it? But why I'm smiling is because a lot of people in the sustainability world kind of talk about their oh shit moment. Mm. Like you have this oh shit moment of like, oh right, okay, God, it is really big and happening and scary. And I, as you're talking, I'm thinking of my moment, which was, you know, a sort of, it was a training presentation in the office, but it was a similar kind of lecture format. And I was like, whoa, why aren't we all worried about this all the time?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think some people maybe have that moment and they almost cannot deal, and they almost go into a denial and like, no, it can't be that bad, and just kind of try and put it in a box and do something different with their lives, or, you know, try and forget about it. But I think, for those who've kind of engaged with that conversation and really heard it deeply, and it's really affecting.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I've spoken to a few people who have questioned whether it's fair to not encourage, but I suppose invite people into that oh shit moment, because it is that kind of, it's the what ignites many of us to start acting. But it is a deeply uncomfortable experience, and it's complicated of how we bring others along that journey, and particularly, you know, younger people. At what point is it fair to have that oh shit moment for them?
And the thing is, it's true. It's not like it's something that's being spun in order to get it. You know, the reason it hits home is because it's all factually, scientifically.
Yeah.
You know, you can't really get away from it, and you can't spin it any different way, which is why it's so powerful, I think. It's just the real bare bones of the truth. But then there's that feeling of, what do you then do next, and what do you do with it, and how often do you kind of go back there, or do you just kind of accept, this is the truth of it, now I'm going to be on a mission to think more positively and more forward thinking.
True. Yeah, it could be very easy to get stuck.
Very. Yeah. And when we do hear of that.
Mm.
Okay, so let me then ask you to just wind forward a little bit from your university days, and just looking at the career and your journey so far, what branch of that journey would you say you're most proud of? What are those moments that do you think have brought the greatest impact?
I think for me, actually, what has brought impact and what I'm proud of possibly have two very different answers.
Okay, yeah. Let's go there.
When I think about what have I had impact in, honestly, what comes to mind is that it's very hard to know, because I'm kind of a believer in even very small actions can catalyze huge impact. And so it could be that one sentence I said to one person one time actually had a really huge impact, because it then completely reshaped how they thought about something and went on to give their energy and time to something. And it could be that a 6-month project that I worked on and we spent a lot of money on actually had very little impact in comparison. And I think it's interesting, because in this space, well, and I suppose in life, we're not great at sitting with that uncertainty. We like to know the outcome of our actions and I suppose where we're going. And I think the reality is we don't know, and we kind of can't know. And releasing that control in a way is, I think, such an important part of this journey for us as a collective, because even if we think of in the past things that we've thought we really knew, it turned out we've completely changed our mind. You know, we used to really honestly believe the earth was flat, and then we found out new information. And I think when I think about sustainability, particularly, even to me, the word kind of sustaining, it has this element of control to it, because it's like holding on to something. What are we trying to hold on to and control? And I question, can you really sustain anything? Because everything always changes. And as we move forward, therefore, into whatever the kind of future unfolds as, I think we should probably be really careful of what we are sustaining, and make sure that the bits that we're holding on to are the bits that we really truly value, and that perhaps that's not competition and it's not endless economic growth and it's not the things that we right now in this day and age believe are just fundamentals in life, because actually they haven't been around for forever. And so I think impact is such a tricky question, but I think for me, if I think about what I'm actually most proud of,
yeah,
I have always really loved learning. And so I think I'm proud that I have stayed curious in that, I suppose, and willing to change, and willing to change my mind, and willing to change what I'm doing and where I'm at. And I think already I'm learning that that's probably bringing more benefit to it than, I don't know, than being fixated on one thing.
Yeah.
And so
these are really interesting, like these ideas of, you know, being curious, being open to uncertainty, being willing to change, being adaptable. Like these are all really, these are the real important skills really that are going to see us through. And you know, that idea of this is how it is and this is how it's got to be and here's a direct line of this to, you know, this results in that, you know, all of those kind of certainties, you've got to hold them very loosely, I think.
Yeah, which is really uncomfortable to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And really it can sound easy, but actually when you have to do that, the physical experience of it, or even just the whole, oh, it's not nice. It's not nice.
And how do you do that? Like, so, you know, if we talk about that feeling of discomfort that you get from not knowing exactly where something is going or not knowing exactly the impact it might have, how do you sit with that discomfort, or how do you be okay with it?
I think I personally am trying to learn that uncomfortable feelings are possibly inevitable.
Yeah.
And there is no end point or destination in life where suddenly the only things you ever feel like are nice, comfortable, happy things. And I think patience actually is what I've learned, is the, even, you know, and this applies to all of life really, but when things do feel not pleasant, rather than desperately trying to kind of eradicate them, I suppose being patient with it and knowing that it passes. But again, that requires this kind of stillness to it, because you can't, it, particularly if you're a problem solver, you really want to, you see a problem and you want to make it better and you want to make that feeling go away and you want to aim for something else. But actually there's something about just being, which is, I don't think in our modern society we're actually very good at anymore.
No, I heard a lovely I read a lovely idea the other day, and it was about how emotions are, you sort of have to see them as a bit of a tunnel. You kind of go through this dark tunnel, there's a light at the end of it where you then start feeling better and more comfortable, but you kind of have to go through it.
Yeah,
you can't just sort of, you know, take the exit route halfway out. You actually have to kind of sit with it and be patient and like you say, let it pass.
Yeah.
And being okay with that. It's wonderful that when I've asked you what you're proudest of, you actually talk about your growth and your own personal development, you know, rather than, oh, I did this, there was this project that meant this, you know, it's a much deeper type of pride actually that I hear.
Yeah. Yeah. And that came quite naturally. And I don't know whether it's a little bit self-critical, because I can't think of many things I don't know that are tangible that I do feel really proud of, but maybe that's just because I don't know, that's never really been my focus. Like, I think particularly because I am early in my career, I've kept moving really,
yeah,
and done quite a lot of different things, because my main goal has been learning.
Yeah.
And so maybe in time, at a different stage in my life, there'll be a more kind of thing that I've really stuck at and a very tangible. I hope so, because that's kind of what I'm working on now. But
yeah, absolutely.
We'll see.
I feel no doubt that, you know, if we were to fast forward a couple of years, even, you know, the community that you're creating at Trio House would be a real source of pride, I would hope, for you. But can we talk a little bit more now about where the tougher times have been? Because I know from when we have chatted in the past that some of the journey you've had so far hasn't always been easy. And in part that's kind of inspired your mission and where you are today. So yeah, can you tell me a bit more about the tough times?
Yeah. There have been a few, I suppose. I suppose one time that comes to mind most is, I suppose, about a year ago, really. Mm. Where it's interesting, I've become really interested in this space, and even still I don't think we have great language around it to really be able to communicate and understand what that experience is. But from where I've got to, I think a moment of, I suppose, deep stress, and not in the more conventional work way of capacity overload, unsupported, deadlines, significant responsibility, but more a kind of deep stress of, ultimately, when you're working on these types of problems, particularly, I think, in the climate change space, you find yourself, I suppose, day in, day out, looking at quite an existential problem. Mm. And your job is to understand that and try and convince other people to not only just acknowledge it, but also do something about it. Mm. And what I suppose went through is didn't really recognize what was going on, but found that my body was kind of telling me symptoms of stress.
Yeah.
And, you know, in our busy working lives, I think it's quite easy to kind of suppress that, and hard, as I said, to really label it and give time to reflect on what it is and what's coming up for you and what the root cause of it is. But I think what I now recognize is a very kind of understandable reaction to the problem at hand, which is this kind of constant messaging that unless we do something quite radical, the future could be quite dire. And that's a really terrifying, terrifying message to not just hear once, but hear kind of day in, day out. And
yes,
feel like it's in part your responsibility to do something about. And what turns, you know, in other work contexts, when your budget gets cut or project gets delayed, or those things are stressful, but you can kind of walk away from them. Whereas I think in this space, my head goes to, oh my God, but this is life and death, people. This isn't just a budget cut. This is really the future of humanity. And maybe that's quite a big jump, but not completely irrational, actually. And I certainly found myself at that time really lying in bed awake at night, just thinking, oh my God, I just can't work out how we do this, because I just feel like we're so far from where we're trying to get to. And of course, in that particular role, people want you to be the optimistic, no, let's tell the positive news stories, let's show the great business cases, the opportunities,
yeah,
which of course you can do, and you can hold all these kind of contradictions, but there is, unless you acknowledge the fact that also inside is this real kind of terror, actually. And I think particularly, you know, maybe everyone feels this in different ways depending on your circumstance, but I found as a younger person, maybe when I see those dates in, you know, we all know 2030, 2050, I think about myself in 2050, I'll be 50. And so where I imagine, I hope that I would have like a family and young kids and a home. And what I'm seeing on the PowerPoint slide is not that, really. And it's a very, I think, biological fear for not just our collective future, but also our individual future. And that's even a privileged position, because it still is my future. You know, many people on this planet, it's there today. And so anyway, so I've become really interested, I suppose, in, we've got to acknowledge that that feeling is really real and kind of to be expected from working in this space. And I know that activists actually are a little bit more vocal in those feelings. I've heard less so of it from the more sustainability professional.
Yeah.
Someone said something really lovely to me actually a while ago, and she said, how can we design a kind of healthy, regulated societal system if our own nervous systems aren't healthy, regulated? And it just really struck me, because I felt like I was doing the exact opposite of that, trying to kind of create something from actually a very dysregulated internal space.
Yeah.
Makes me question not just what we're trying to do, but how we go about it. Because I fear that if we're going about it in kind of status quo manner, very rushed, competitive, very kind of leading with our heads and not too much kind of compassion and empathy and listening and slow. There's something about slowness that I think we're missing. Despite the fact that there's an urgency problem, I just worry that we're going to kind of slightly run ourselves into the ground. And I think we both were there together when we heard the metaphor of this isn't just, it's not a sprint and it's not even a marathon. It's more of a relay. And how, as individuals, do we really work together to support ourselves through this? Because it's really not easy. And
yeah,
I suppose that's why I have come to where I'm now at with Trail House, which is very much a organization that's set up to support sustainability professionals.
Yeah.
Both in the sense of acknowledging that really tough bit, but then also really honestly coming together to provide that kind of collective energy.
Just before you tell me a bit more about that mission, and just going back to that moment that you said, you know, you called it a moment of deep stress. Like, how did that manifest? Like, how might others, you know, are there things that happen that others might recognize in themselves? What were you feeling at that time?
Yeah, I think, well, for me personally, I think stress manifests possibly different for other people. What really became obvious is the kind of panicky symptoms and kind of heart rate and actually inability to speak. I've always found, even from young, I was fairly okay at kind of presenting, and I didn't find that as nerve-wracking. And then I did have this one moment. We were at a kind of, it was just an internal workshop. But as I got up, I only had to deliver like 5 minutes of a presentation, and I just could not breathe at all. And it was so embarrassing, actually, because I remember I literally had to say to the audience of maybe like 40 people, I was like, I'm really sorry, I just actually can't breathe right now. And I struggled with that moment because my body really failed me. I felt like I'd prepared for it. It wasn't a stressful environment. It was just internal. Like, it was, I did not need to be perfect. There was no real in the moment rational reason to respond like that. But what I realized was that it was that suppression bubbles up in other ways. If you ignore it, it will find a way to come out. And it was really from that moment on that I found myself having actually quite a few panic attacks at work. I suppose feeling really out of control with that, and actually quite scared, because I've always been very interested in health, both of the planet and of people and myself. And it was a very complicated feeling of knowing that the work I care so deeply about is actually really jeopardizing my personal health. And if I didn't care about the work, it probably would have been a lot easier to just back off.
Yeah.
You know, and I even remember my mum saying at the time, like, can't you just do less? Can't you just not? Like, and I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, this is, I can't give up on this, mum. Like, this is, I believe so deeply in it. And so it was hard to prioritize my own self. And then it just got to the point where I was like, well, hang on, this is so unsustainable. You've got to pause. And I was lucky in that I could actually just step away and take some time.
And I think sometimes these moments of crisis or you know, the deep stress, they come and you actually just, they do create a crisis. You know, they create a kind of, you just have to listen and do and make a significant change. Other people are perhaps more fortunate in that it can be spotted a bit earlier.
True.
And they can kind of, you know, change their working habits or their mindset, or, you know, get support around them and kind of stay in the world they're in. But I think the thing that you and I both have in common, I think, is that this moment forced a change that you couldn't ignore and you couldn't deal with in the current setup. Were there things that when you look back on it, you think, oh, I could have spotted this sooner. I could have, if I'd have listened to myself, you know, months before, I might have prevented that sort of real crisis moment.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, it's interesting because it is so much easier to say when you're not in that moment. Mm. And I, having had some time to reflect, there were quite a few things that I actually wrote a list myself of things that I felt I had adopted in the time since that I wanted to maintain, and things that I didn't want to go back to, kind of behaviors. And then as I entered this new phase of more high intensity work again, it creeps in. It creeps in. And even though I really said to myself, no, I do not want to go there, I do not want to work at a pace that feels unsustainable, I don't want to allow myself, you know, when I feel physical stress, I want to act then and there, nip it in the bud and not let it build. It's really hard. It's really hard to do that. And I don't think I've quite cracked that. And maybe it is slightly that inevitably in life, there are moments of higher stress and lower stress. And you can't eradicate stress because it is just a human feeling. But I think possibly in all of it, talking about it.
Yeah.
Is something that can kind of always help. But I do think in this particular context, it's kind of hard to find the words and hard possibly to find people who relate to that and understand it, because it's not just stress about work, and it's not as easily solved as just taking some time off or you know, saying no to a few more projects. It's slightly more complicated than that.
Sure. And when you were in the space of coming out of that period and thinking about kind of what next, what would you say? You've talked about that list you made for yourself, you know, do more of this, don't do that. What else helped to kind of get you out of that real moment that you described about a year ago?
For me, honestly, it was real nature immersion, which I was lucky that I could go do. I think nature is such an amazing healer, really, and gives a space of perspective and reflection, calmness, clarity, you know, beyond just how it feels. I'm increasingly aware of the real kind of scientific benefits of being in nature and having your feet on the ground and being in the sea and all of those things that really actually regulate your nervous system. And I think maybe just giving yourself options, because when you're in something, it can feel very hard to see alternatives. And it might not be that you really need a huge change at all, but it's almost allowing yourself to look up over the kind of stick your head out of the busyness.
Yes.
And just look around you. And then whether you decide to keep going with what you're doing or to have a bit of a change in direction, allowing yourself that time to do that, I think is so valuable, because then you can crack on. And it's kind of just, it's like taking a moment to look at the compass on a walk before just heading off into the,
yes, nice,
yeah, into the bush. Not rushing it and just reflecting, stock check. Yeah. Which I found really helped me.
And how do you, so all these lessons that you've learned through this time, How are you kind of bringing that through into Trio House? You know, that's I feel it's sort of all part of that mission to help others.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the main thing for me, Matt, has always been, I think the strongest leadership is really leading by example. Mm. Again, easier said than done, because none of us are perfect, and we all make mistakes and learn and adapt. But I do think in what I'm trying to create with Trio House, the best way to instill the values and ethos is by trying to do that myself.
Yeah.
And which, if I really think about it, is actually really nice, because then I'm like, oh, okay, I can actually, that allows me to do this in a really non-stressed way.
Yeah.
Which, as I said, is hard, because you find yourself just getting caught up in, especially if you're ambitious or want to do well, that pressure can inevitably lead to feeling a bit of stress. But being patient and working actually slow, allowing yourself to do that, even though it feels kind of contradictory, really valuing connection with people and enjoying that is really important. And I think also being really honest and kind of, I think sometimes we find, I don't know, it depends on different leaders, but you have an expectation of people maybe. Whereas I really feel like I'm leading this, I suppose, in a way I don't have all the answers at all. If anything, I have probably the most questions. And
yeah,
I personally am really actually comfortable with that, because I'm almost setting it up as the keenest student rather than the teacher with something to share. I'm the one who wants to find the answers. And so I don't at all feel like I have to have it all worked out, really, which allows me, I suppose, to be more vulnerable in how I approach it. And I, you know, some people might not like that, because some people want that kind of certainty and somebody with a really clear vision and direction and clarity on everything. And whilst I've got bits of that, I'm quite honest in that I don't have really, I don't have all the clarity. Mm-hmm. And so it's people's own choice of whether they get on board with that or not. And yeah, I think that's why I've always been drawn to this kind of uncertainty feel, because that to me is a huge lesson for us all to learn to get comfortable with that.
I love that approach that you talk about. And actually, when you're talking about taking things slower and being patient and trying to kind of live out those new ways of living and working through this new enterprise, it really resonates for me, because that's sort of what I've been trying to do with my coaching practice. It's like with any new enterprise, you can throw your all into it, you know, especially, you know, it's not a 9-to-5 job. So it's down to you to make it. You can make it 7 a.m. to midnight. You know, you can make it 9-to-5. You can make it 10-to-2, whatever. You know, it's down to you to kind of go, well, what do I want this to be for myself, and what do I want to role model for others? So yeah, like having those boundaries and then implementing them. And when you talk about being slow, and that's a word you've used quite a bit today. And it's funny, because at the beginning of this year, someone said to me, oh, you know, like come up with three words that kind of describe how you want to live this year in terms of your business and your kind of work. And one of mine was slow. And I sometimes have to look at that and go, come on, Liv, like you said slow. So just slow down. You don't have to do the 50 things.
Yeah,
you can just do one thing at a time, or, you know, so it's you have to keep on having that word with yourself. But writing those, you know, what are my watchwords, and writing them down and looking at them is a great thing to kind of go, oh yeah, I said I was going to slow down this year.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually I find that when I remind myself that, it comes as a relief.
Yes.
Because the pace is uncomfortable. And then I'm like, oh yeah, okay. Mm. that's actually, that was a gift to myself. And so I should take it.
Yeah. I think it's going to be on my three words for next year as well.
Yeah.
Because it's a good one. So you've been talking already about kind of, advice or thoughts for others as we've been going through, but do you have any kind of reflections, I suppose, of any seeds of wisdom or any bits of advice you would give to others in this profession doing this type of work? What would your thoughts be to share?
What comes to mind for me is this feels like a time of real courage, and ultimately, because there's always going to be change, but I suppose we are hoping to, you know, we all talk ourselves as change, driving change, systemic change. And change is, again, really complicated and can be really hard to transition and openly walk into change. And that takes a huge amount of courage, really. And I think what I have reflected on my learnings in the last few years, I suppose, is that it's not always obvious, because I've had times where I've stepped into change and at the beginning it's really uncomfortable and tough and not worked out how I hoped it would be, and I'm like, why have I done this? Serious doubt, serious questioning, and want to turn around.
Yeah.
But almost as you said earlier with the tunnel, when I've been able to keep moving forward and go through it, on the other side has always been something so much better, so much more, I don't know, unexpectedly, whether it was joyful or an opportunity or inspiring, energetic, whatever it kind of was. And so I've had a few of those moments now and I think, okay, that was interesting. I almost gave up on that. But because I stuck through it, thank God I did, because I would have missed out on what was almost on the other side. And when I think about this stage now of us as sustainability professionals, so much of what we do takes so much courage, whether it's, you know, the big, and I don't even mean necessarily kind of crazy heroic, but even just holding somebody accountable to values takes real courage. Or vulnerably saying, I actually don't know the answer to that question, takes courage. Or imagining a better scenario that's different to the one now takes courage. And I think ultimately anybody who is in this space and is holding on to optimism for a brighter future, that's a courageous act, because it would be very easy to just not. And I'm sure we all know many people who are choosing to just not. And I don't really have all the answers at all to how to do this, but one of my favorite books ever that I talk about a lot is Susan Jeffers' Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And the our relationship to fear, and how ultimately the root of that is this fear that we can't handle the outcome. Even if it goes worst case scenario, we're worried that we won't be able to handle it. And once you get your head around the fact that actually you can kind of handle anything, you can really, you will get through, even if it feels awful. I have actually really loved that idea of, in those moments of feeling really scared, acknowledging the fear and saying, yeah, I feel terrified, but I'm going to do it anyway. And for me, that's led to moments of, I don't know, even in a big town hall kind of thing, put my hand up and asked a question, feel absolutely terrified, thinking, why am I doing this? I could just sit silent like everybody else. But I say to myself, right, feel the fear, do it anyway, put your hand up, go. or whatever it is, or delivering a bigger presentation in a workshop format, or anything that makes you feel a bit scared, putting yourself out there, doing it anyway. And
yes,
I can already see, for me, that's led in part to where I am now. And so I don't know how that will unfold. And in a way, a huge of what I am doing now, starting up Trejo House, which is ultimately starting a nonprofit from complete scratch, honestly, I'm like, what am I doing? What am I doing? Because this is so scary and so many unknowns and personal choices in there as well. But I suppose there was this moment and continues to be a feeling of, right, okay, yeah, it feels scary, but do it anyway. Do it anyway. Yeah.
I'm nodding and smiling at everything you're saying, because one of my other words, really? Three, was bravery.
Yeah.
Which is exactly to your exact point. Yeah, it's scary, but like, they, you know, growth comes at the edge of your comfort zone. That's if you're continually sort of, you know, playing in that space of doing things that do make you a bit uncomfortable or a little bit afraid or a bit scared, then that's where the opportunity comes. That's where the new stuff comes. That's where the good stuff comes. But it does feel really terrifying, doesn't it? And sometimes you almost have to, like, almost it just do it before your brain has a chance to catch up with what the hell are you doing. You know, just do it. So I remember the first time I did a post on LinkedIn to say I'm going to be a coach, and I've you know, left the corporate world and this is my new thing, and I remembered that feeling of like, okay, just do the video. It's a video. Like, I'd never even done that before. It felt awful, horrible. I felt sick. I did the video and I pressed post, and I literally just like threw the phone over the other side of the room and like ran away. If I could have flushed it down the toilet, I would have.
And
I felt horrific, like, just, oh God, like, I, you know, horrible feeling of discomfort. But 10 minutes later, I got my first client.
Wow. Yeah.
And I was like, oh,
isn't that amazing? Yeah.
it's amazing. And these moments of, you know, and you have to kind of log that away and go, you know, remember when I did that and remember how crappy I felt? And then remember what happened straight afterwards, that, you know, things started to move in the right direction.
And I think it is interesting because some of those things can be quick. You know, if it's an action where it just takes a few minutes, just get it done, over with.
Yeah. And there was luck going on in my situation.
It depends what your...
10 minutes, but yeah.
Even the act of like making a video and putting it on LinkedIn is in itself a fairly contained thing. And what I've had moments like that before where... you know, the fear was something like getting on a flight, and you just do it. And by the time you're there, right, you're there, crack on.
Yeah.
Whereas what I'm experiencing now with Trio House is a much longer period of that. And it's not like I just do it, be done and run away. It's, I've got to stick at it. I can't, like, it, this is probably going to be months, if not years, of this initial fearful, oh my God, I feel really scared about this feeling. Honestly, having to tell myself every day, don't give up, don't give up, don't give up. Because...
Yeah. And back to where we started, that feeling of just being okay with being uncomfortable and just finding a way to sort of build that into your life. And it's okay to feel like this.
Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting.
So the piece of advice...
Feel the fear and do it anyway. And read the book. Yeah. Read the book, it makes a lot of sense. But yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It's been so wonderful talking to you. I feel like I'd like to have another hour chatting to you. I really love hearing you talk about your story and all the learning you've had from it, and how that's all channeled into what you're doing now. Do you want to do a little pitch for Trio House so that the listener can think about whether they'd like to join the collective?
Sure. So, well, as I said, Trio House is fundamentally, it's a community of people who all have a professional shared interest in sustainability, whether that's corporate, NGO, policy, environmental, social, the whole kind of systemic realm. And fundamentally, it's about coming together as honest human beings, fully acknowledging, as your podcast is all about, the real human side of this, and collectively equipping ourselves with the capabilities and really authentic connection beyond just that kind of networking space to be able to do this work. Because certainly in my life, my ability to get through the hardest stuff or the most joyful parts have always been part of a really strong community where there is a genuine care for one another and joy. And I don't think we've quite got that we're not using that enough in this problem. And it's such a huge part of humanity's history, our ability to come together as collective humans. And so we have an awesome space in London, and it is all in person. And it's really a space where everybody's kind of a giver and everyone's a taker, because this, as I've very quickly learned, this community of people are all huge givers and are all hugely wise, compassionate, thoughtful, kind people. And so it's more of a facilitation space that unlocks that from everybody, and comes together in a really friendly way. And we will see how it grows and evolves, because it is very much led by the members and the people who come. And as we've said all through this podcast, the kind of, I suppose, the organic evolution of it is in a way the whole point. And so, yes, I would say very much come along if you're based in London. And true, actually.
And even if you're not, actually.
You came.
I made the trip.
Exactly.
And it was absolutely worth it. I came from deepest, darkest Cotswolds, and it was absolutely worth it. And the people were lovely and so interesting. And as you said, you know, drawn from all different kinds of facets of this work, and all kind of coming to it with a different set of professional skills and questions, but kind of all sharing that human that human kind of challenge. So I love the day that I spent with you, and hope to do it more. And I would definitely urge people to look you up and come and check it out.
We're
it is
very
beautiful
lucky
as well. It's a very, for a converted factory, it's particularly
exactly very green
space.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely. And
I've loved this
conversation. Thank you. And thank you for being so open and sharing it all, you know, and all your thoughts and how I think this can really help others.
Thanks.
And good luck with your mission. It's really a really important
I'll answer your question again in a few years, and I hope my my proud will be different.
Yes. You will have something to be very proud of in this, and I just
super
know it.
Thanks, Liv.
So yeah, thank you. Well, I'm going to put the link to Trio House in the show notes for this podcast, and I really hope that you will go and check out the website and the events that Gemma is hosting at Trio House. It is such a lovely space and such a lovely community that's being gathered there. It's really well worth, if you're anywhere near London, it's really well worth a visit and to check it out. I'd love to hear what you make of it. I'm sure you could tell throughout that conversation how much I love talking to Gemma. She's got so much wisdom and such a fantastic perspective that she shared with us today. That idea of that oh shit moment that we've probably all had, then kind of leading to that deep stress moment, which really resonated for me. It's very it's not dissimilar from my own personal experience, but then kind of born of that is this wonderful community that she's created and this fantastic perspective of bravery, of moments of reflection, of being patient, of taking things slow and steady, and that idea that this is not a sprint, not a marathon, but it's perhaps more of a relay, and the community is really central to making that part of it work. So I'd love to hear what you think. Let me know. And I'm so grateful that Gemma took the time to share all that with us today. Well, thank you so much for joining me on my yellow bench for this episode of Rooted. If you'd like to hear more conversations like this, then please follow me or subscribe to Rooted wherever you get your podcasts. Please help others to find Rooted by either commenting or leaving a review, or just telling your friends and your colleagues about the episode you've just listened to. And I'd also love to invite you to join my Rooted email community. The link for that can be found in the show notes. To chat more with me about the one-to-one coaching that I offer to sustainability leaders, please get in touch with me either via LinkedIn or yellowbenchcoaching.com. And finally, a big thank you to John Cropper for his editing and production of today's episode. See you next time. Bye-bye.